My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print, or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of The Mark Moss Show, where we talk about the intersection of politics, finance, and technology, which, of course, is Bitcoin. We're talking about the decentralized revolution that the world is going through. I am coming to you from South Beach, Miami, Florida. I am here for the Bitcoin 2022 conference. It is going off. We got 40,000 people are expected to be here. Man, it's growing fast. I am sitting down with Bitcoin Zay. You can find him on Twitter at Bitcoin Zay, Z-A-Y. We're talking with Isaiah. He is the author, I should say, of the number one best-selling book, Bitcoin and Black America. What's up, Zay?
Hey, what's going on, Mark? Glad to be here, brother.
We actually met in person for the first time in Miami. I think it was December. Was it December of last year?
Maybe November.
Or November.
Our Basel.
Yeah. We were at Michael Saylor's house having a barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty good. Times.
Absolutely.
That was pretty good. You were with Scott Melker, right? I think.
Yep.
He's around here somewhere. I'm supposed to see him. I haven't seen him yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shout out to Scott. Thanks for the invite. Great speaking with Saylor and everybody. So.
Yeah, that was cool. Time. So, Zay, Bitcoin and Black America. Why you got to write a book on that?
Because I wanted my community to make sure we're a part of the new digital revolution and we don't miss it, the opportunity to build like we did during the internet age. Mm-hmm. I mean, my parents and a lot of my older relatives, they didn't take the internet serious. And they had the opportunity to build in the 90s, just kind of let it pass by. So this time around, Bitcoin is going to be mainstream. So the Black community has to be involved. That's all it is. And one of the main things in our community that's always being discussed is equal opportunity. What's more equal than Bitcoin?
Yeah.
More work you put in, more Bitcoin you get, better life, long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I preach the same thing, right? Like I've for a dozen years, I've been researching wealth transfers because in 2008, I got my butt kicked and I lost all my wealth. And I found out all my wealth transferred to somebody else. I didn't like that. Mm-hmm. So I've been studying these, you know, phenomenons of wealth transfers, how they work, what events set them up, obviously, and, you know, volatility in the markets like in 2008 causes it, but also mm-hmm. like new technology. To your point, there's a good opportunity here. And you mentioned equal opportunity. I mean, everyone has the opportunity to jump in and jump in. It's open source. It's permissionless. Nobody needs permission.
Right.
So everybody can just jump in and take mm-hmm. advantage of it. So it is an equal opportunity for everybody. Mm-hmm. Do you think like the Black community needs like a special invite that like, I mean, don't we just want to tell everybody that it's equal opportunity to jump in?
Oh, yeah. I wish it was that way. Theoretically speaking, everybody should just get the message. But right. in practice, a lot of times seeing a Black face, it gets them more open to listening.
Sure.
And it's sort of disheartening that people can't just get the information and get it. But yeah. I understand how people work. So yeah. What we saw was in 2019, Black community was least likely to use Bitcoin and crypto. And then recent poll, now we're more likely this year, which I believe over the past few years, a lot of the changes in the economy, COVID, yeah. a lot of the market stuff started pushing towards Bitcoin more. So I realized that's what was needed. And of course, long term, it's for everybody. So the message is going to be,
yeah,
it doesn't matter about race, religion,
yeah.
social status. But I think these groups that were, you know, basically divided into whatever subsection you put yourself into, they need good Bitcoin message, not yeah. the number go up, get rich tomorrow, Ponzi scheme. So
yeah, it's certainly nice to have somebody that you can identify with. Right. You know, I grew up racing dirt bikes. I love racing dirt bikes, and one of the best dirt bike racers in the world, James Stewart, is a Black guy. You know, and you know, once he got in, and he was the best. I mean, he was insane, and it, you know, then it just, I think, you know, other Black people probably said, oh, well, we can do that too, right? And so so there's some of that. So I get that. And no different than any other, you know, women, same thing, right? If a woman can do it, like other women are like, oh, well, shoot, if they can do it, I can do it too. So I guess same thing there.
Oh, yeah. And can I also say too, the media does a good job of the portrayal of the Bitcoin community being only white males. And they use that as like a negative. They say, oh, it's only white males getting
rich. To seem an exclusive.
To seem exclusive club. Yeah. All these white males are getting rich again and nobody else is in the market, which is bullshit. That is not something that is even remotely close. We have a global market, and somehow the media message is still the same. It's a bad, evil white man taking over again, and I'm a little disheartening by that too. So,
yeah, let's talk about that for a minute. You're listening to the Mark Moss Show. I'm sitting down with Bitcoin Zay. I'm talking with Isaiah, the author of Bitcoin Black. What was it? Bitcoin and Black America, sorry, Bitcoin and Black America. We're talking about Bitcoin. We're at the Bitcoin conference in Miami, but let's go back to just, you know, the black and white thing, or not even black and white, just we're in a world today of identity politics,
right?
And they're trying to break us down by our identity. So to your point, it's, you know, white men, to your point, in Bitcoin. But maybe to women, it's just men in Bitcoin.
Exactly.
So it's like
that too.
Whatever they can divide. Hey, men versus women, white men versus black men, gay men versus straight men. I mean, like
religious, non-religious. I mean, all of that.
Yeah.
They still use the same subsections to divide us up.
And then they're trying to like break us down to the lowest common denominator. Well, it's like, well, I'm a woman. Well, I'm a black woman. Well, I'm a gay black woman. Well, I'm a,
just keep going. Oh man, just keep it going.
You know, but I like to say that we don't align on identities. We align on values.
Exactly.
Right? Mm-hmm. You agree with that?
I do. Absolutely. And I think more people need to understand that that is all how it's always been. It's just on the surface level, people have used those dividers to put us into groups. But once you get into these groups, you realize I don't agree with everybody in this group. So you have to identify with people. I identify with Bitcoiners. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. And we identify with different groups at different times. So I'm a surfer. So sometimes I'm in my surfing group, but I don't agree with everybody in that surfing group, but I'm there because we align on surfing.
Exactly.
And then, you know, here I'm in a Bitcoin group and I'm aligned with these guys on Bitcoin, but I don't align with them on everything.
Exactly.
And then later I'm going to go back and be in a California group. Mm-hmm. And
like, which is how it should be. Think for yourself. You don't have to, you know, be a part of the crowd and, oh, we all agree together. And the whole, the bubble people put themselves in where everybody agrees. No, we're here for this. We agree on this. Cool. And then move on. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you think, do you think that message has really been getting exaggerated? Meaning like really trying to like break us down from identities? I think you said earlier, like that's how it used to be.
Mm-hmm. As far as the identity, well, in my mind, that's how it used to be because I don't see any oppression stopping anybody from anything.
Right.
It may be a little harder for you, maybe a little easier for some people, but there's nothing stopping you today. And I think that's the biggest message people need to get. And the media is constantly trying to tell people why they're oppressed or why they can't do something,
right.
which is the opposite message you should be giving people. I'm telling people why they can succeed and
yeah.
why you do have equal opportunity.
Yeah.
There's no more excuses. So yeah. what are you going to do now? And I want to shout out to Mark Cuban. I remember he did an interview in the 2000s. He said, the reason why I have a state-of-the-art locker room with TVs and the best, so no more excuses. I don't want to hear we can't win a championship. Mm. You have everything. You have yeah. the best doctors. You have the best medical staff, everything. So no more excuses. And that's where I'm at now.
Yeah. So you have in front of you right there my new book I just wrote with Alex Fetsky. It's called The Uncommunist Manifesto. So we took the Communist Manifesto, we rewrote it called The Uncommunist Manifesto. And in the Communist Manifesto, Karl Marx, by the way, if you're listening, check out uncommunist.com. We're still in the book launch. You can support it, uncommunist.com. But in the original Communist Manifesto, Karl Marx talks about dividing people by two classes, rich and poor,
right.
proletariat and bourgeoisie. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the definition is of rich and poor. Like, at what point do you cross into the bourgeoisie? And then if I happen to fall into that category, does that automatically mean I'm an oppressor?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. What, like, you just worked hard, make a lot of money. You must be oppressing somebody.
Yeah, now yeah, I got to yeah. be but at what point? Like, you know what I mean? Like, Biden says they won't tax over 400,000. But if you live in, like, Southern California, 400,000 doesn't go as far as it does in Kansas, for
exactly.
example, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, so dividing these things. But back to kind of this identity, they break it down and then they make the in the Communist Manifesto, they make the oppressed, the proletariat, victims.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You can't get ahead because of these evil capitalists. Mm-hmm. You have nothing to offer to the market. They say that the proletariat has nothing to offer but their labor, and their labor won't ever turn into capital. So, hey, it's not your fault. You don't have anything to offer. All you have is your labor. They don't value that. And it's just like victim, 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 mm-hmm. victim, victim, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, so if we don't go take from these guys, then what are you going to do? And so that's really how they frame that up.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to The Mark Moss Show. I'm sitting down with Isaiah. You can find him on Twitter at BitcoinZay. That's Z-A-Y. He's the author of the book, Bitcoin and Black America, number one best-selling book. So you should check it out, Bitcoin and Black America. We're coming to you from the Bitcoin conference in Miami. About 40,000 people are descending here. We got a lot more to dig into with Bitcoin Zay when we get back in a second, so do not go away. All right, welcome back. You are listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the intersection of politics, finance, and technology, which of course is Bitcoin, and it is taking us into the decentralized revolution. The entire world is changing as we speak right before our very eyes. We were talking about, before the break, this identity politics. Isaiah Bitcoin Zay wrote this book, Bitcoin and Black America. And we're just talking about some of this identity politics. And it coincides with this book that I just wrote, which is the Uncommunist Manifesto, because Karl Marx in the original Communist Manifesto also kind of started this identity politics, if you will. It wasn't black and white. It was rich and poor, but it's kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that Alex and I addressed in that book was, why is that book, why is that ideology so attractive? And it's 175 years and it just like the book won't go away. Mm-hmm. Like, but it why do you think ideas like identity politics, victimhood, if you will, are so attractive to certain groups of people?
Well, it's easier to complain and basically say there's no way out and then say, well, everything is somebody else's fault.
Yeah.
It's always easier. It's easier to be lazy. We just know how that is.
That's
exactly. And I've never really seen people work hard and not succeed. It may take you a little longer, like I said before. Maybe some people had it easier, but I don't see where the division in classes and division in race, how that is the reason why you're not succeeding. That's malarkey. So long term.
No, granted, some people might have it harder than others.
Yeah,
we're all dealt with different hands.
Exactly. Yes, and I think when you see some of the international problems that we've seen in other countries, you start to compare yourself. You're the top 10% in the
sure.
U.S. If you have a car and a house, I mean, basically the top 10% of the world.
Yeah.
So it really depends on how you look at it. So I think that's the low-hanging fruit. Just tell people they're victims and you don't have to ever deal with them trying to succeed. Tell people they can succeed. Now all of a sudden you have way more competition and people who are actually confident in their abilities.
Yeah.
So a lot of times I think that's being used to suppress people's mindset, which that's really all it takes is a change of mindset to say, I want to succeed. And then once you have that, you have generations of people telling them, oh, yeah, you can't succeed anyway. You can't make it out of here anyway. So,
yeah,
unfortunate, but it does happen. I think that's a big reason it's still going on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People just like to be that victim. So if we bring this back to Bitcoin and back to your book,
mm-hmm.
So you're really encouraging, empowering black people. Like, hey, this is an opportunity. You have an equal opportunity. It's permissionless. Everyone can join, mm-hmm. you know. Get in early. Get mm-hmm. this wealth benefit from that wealth transfer,
mm-hmm.
Which I like. So How's that been received?
It's been pretty good. I have had some pushback from a lot of people who, it's unfortunate, but some people don't want to be free.
Yeah.
It's too much work.
It is.
You can show somebody freedom and they'll still say no, simply because they have to put work in. And unfortunately, we're starting to see people use other reasons why they don't like Bitcoin. Like, for the first time ever, the environmental thing started coming up
right.
amongst people that I've been on book tour and seen. So that may be just another reason why they don't want to get into it or don't right. understand it. But it's been well received. I had a book tour nationwide, and I really only had one person argue with me. It was funny. By the end of the argument, he already told me, he said, well, I do own Bitcoin, but I just wanted to go back and forth. I was like, all right, well.
But I have seen it. I have seen the media angling Bitcoin where it's, you know, to your point you made earlier, just like white, you know, old white rich guys kind of a thing or whatever. Do you think if they position it like that, then like the black community wouldn't want to adopt it? They're like, oh, it's for them. Like, we're not going to do that kind of thing?
I think that's a play. The chasm I'm waiting for is the fact that the Democratic Party, we vote like 90% in our community. That's the party that's pushing that Bitcoin is not available for minorities, or that it's an environmental issue, or that it's going to cause or that is causing inflation, whatever they can use to keep communities out of Bitcoin, which is hilarious. Because if you say you're for the people that voted for you, why would you push that message? So that chasm is coming soon. There's a lot of black people who understand that message is incorrect. We have the information there now. And that's going to be interesting to see. I think the next primary, people are going to start looking at more people who are pro Bitcoin, and it's on both sides of the aisle. So it's really more about economics at this point.
Yeah. We've seen a lot of very prominent black athletes come out like heavy pro Bitcoin. There was Russell Okong. I think he was like the big one. He was really pushing it.
Yeah.
But here at the Bitcoin conference, we have Serena Williams. She needs no introduction, and she's investing into these Bitcoin companies. And then, what's his name, the other footballer that's here?
Odell Beckham.
Odell Beckham, he's here. And so we're starting to see that. So that's got to be helping, I would imagine, a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely with marketing. People look up to athletes. They look up to entertainers. When they say it, they listen to them. But one thing I would like to change in the black community is that our quote-unquote leaders are just entertainers and people who play sports. That's one thing I don't see a lot in other communities.
Is that true though?
We
had a black president.
Oh yeah,
we have a black vice president. I mean,
exactly. Yeah, well, that's, I'm talking about what we consider
stereotypically
what
whatever.
We consider the people who influence the youth. And by that I mean it's not a lot of businessmen, it's not a lot of authors and economists in the black community that are held that high.
Right. The community themselves are looking more up to the athletes,
and that's what I would like to shift. Is that the real thought leaders and the people changing things are at the top? That's who you're listening to. And then entertainment, sports, whatever, they're cool. But unfortunately for right now, if, you know, Jay-Z or if somebody who's, you know, pretty popular in the community says it, their word is bigger than somebody like myself.
Yeah.
Which, again, I've been in the space almost 10 years. And, you know, some of these famous people are just getting in just now.
Yeah.
They don't even know how to explain anything to you. So hopefully that changes, but it is needed because that is where we are right now.
Yeah.
People look at social media, look at TV all the time. So that's what they look up to.
So let's talk about Bitcoin a little bit and then tie back to the black community. But a lot of times people look at Bitcoin you mentioned like entertainers and athletes, right? So like it seems like, and not specifically black community or any identity, but just overall in the United States, we're really starting to like demonize rich people. Like, oh, Jeff Bezos, he's greedy, he's a crook, or Elon Musk or whatever, right? And we're demonizing rich people. But then like in sports, like LeBron James is like the best basketball player or whatever. And like nobody demonizes LeBron James for being so good at basketball, making a bunch of money.
Right.
So what do you think the difference is? Like, why would somebody demonize someone making a lot of money, but not someone who dominates similarly, but in sports?
I think it's the thought process that the rich should be giving back to whoever doesn't have it. It's this thought process. I think the media has brainwashed people into thinking that the wealth someone else has should be redistributed, much like the original communist manifesto was saying, and that if it isn't, that they're evil people. When in reality, the money you
make. What about LeBron James? He's super rich.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I don't get... I mean, people like it because I think they think he deserves it because he's the best at what he does. But they don't look at Jeff Bezos as the LeBron James of his industry or other CEOs as the LeBron James. They don't know how much work they put in order to get to that point. They see him on TV. And I think that's more of the difference is that, oh, he's on TV. He's famous. He should have this money. And then when somebody else achieves something, gets to billionaire status, they usually think to themselves, well, you had to step on somebody to get there or you had to do something nefarious. Unfortunately, I hope that's not people's thought process long term. But I think the rich have always been looked at as hated because a lot of the Communist Manifesto has been pushed, that thought process, throughout the education system. Mm. Always hate the rich.
Yeah.
Even if you become one of them, even if you become rich, people are apologizing.
Unless you're Jay-Z or you're LeBron James, yeah, then you're not hated, and Jay-Z's a billionaire. No one's hating him over it.
Yeah, if people like you.
yeah. One is, like you said, looked up to. One is not, right? One is more famous. One is not. One drives culture. One doesn't. I have my own ideas about that. I'll tell you what I think about that in a minute, and we'll bring it back to Bitcoin because I think it's an important piece that I think Bitcoin can fix, like a lot of other things.
Right.
You're listening to the Mark Moss Show. I am sitting down with Isaiah of Bitcoin Zay. He's the author of Bitcoin and Black America, and we are coming to you from Miami Beach, Florida, right now for the Bitcoin 2022 conference. About 40,000 people coming into town for this. It is growing fast. We talked about early on, if you were with us, Isaiah was talking about how this is a big opportunity for Black America. It's a big opportunity for everybody, and it is still early, so you haven't missed your chance. If you haven't bought some Bitcoin, buy $5 worth. Buy $5 worth. You're going to spend more than that on lunch. Get in. But don't go away. We'll be right back with more. All right. Welcome back. You are listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about Bitcoin. We're talking about the decentralized revolution that is happening all across the world. As we speak, it's literally changing the world before our very eyes. I'm coming to you from Miami Beach from the Bitcoin Conference 2022. And I'm sitting down with Isaiah. We're talking with, he's on Twitter, at Bitcoin Zay, author of Bitcoin and Black America. And before the break, we were kind of talking about it's a big opportunity for Black America. That's his book is about. It's a big opportunity for everybody. And we were talking about some of this identity politics that's really separated the Black community, but it separates everybody, sexes and races and genders and, mm-hmm. and preferences and all that today. But I was asking you, we were talking about why you might look at LeBron James being so good mm-hmm. and so rich, and nobody demonizes him, but if Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk gets rich, then people demonize them. And I've thought about this quite a bit, and I was thinking it's that people view the rules of basketball are fair. The rules of basketball are fair, but everybody knows the rules of the financial system are not fair.
Right.
I know that for LeBron James to be the best basketball player, he's played by the same rules and guidelines as every other player.
Right.
But I look at these rich people in the financial system and they have not mm-hmm. played by the same rules.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're all dealt with different hands.
Right.
LeBron James is genetically going to – I'll never compete with him.
Right.
I'm not as tall as him.
Yeah, 6'9", 250 is hard.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I'll never compete with him, nor did I have parents like he had.
Mm-hmm.
And his parents probably gave him good genetics, and they probably pushed him from a young age, and he probably played, worked really hard his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have that. My parents didn't. Teach me. My dad doesn't play basketball. He didn't teach me how to play.
Right.
My parents didn't push me to do that. So I didn't have the same opportunity as him.
Mm-hmm.
But I could have. I mean, I still could have gone and played basketball. I mean, mm-hmm. there were kids in my neighborhood
right.
playing, white kids playing basketball. I could have done it.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't. But I don't view that as wrong because we played by the same rules. And so what do you think about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I tend to agree with that. Like you said, people look at the financial system, think it's unfair in different spots. You look at basketball, football, baseball, whatever, professional sports, they all play the same rules. So, yeah, I tend to agree with that. And I also think anything that you're blessed with, like LeBron's ability or, size, people, anybody in the sports industry, usually blessed that way, use what you have to
yeah.
get what you want. And
yeah.
I think that's what people are misconstruing with the financial side is people were using what they had to get what they want. They just didn't play by the same set of rules.
Yeah.
yeah.
And if you look at basketball, again, I'm not a basketball player, but I still love the analogy. But like you have like a big player like LeBron and maybe a little player like Curry.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're totally different,
mm-hmm.
but they still have to abide by the same set of rules. But the way they approach the game is different.
Mm-hmm.
Because of their strengths and weaknesses that they have, even though the rules are set.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the financial system, the rules get changed,
okay.
right? And so...
Yeah. Well, I will say with Steph, I grew up with Steph in Charlotte playing basketball with him. I think I'm the last person to beat him in three-point contest.
Sure. That's a big claim, Zay.
No, it's true. I beat him at his dad's camp. Dead serious. But what I will say about him is the advantage he had was his dad playing the NBA. So his dad knew exactly what workouts to do for him right. and his brother to be better than people who were small, other smaller guards. So
yeah.
they ascended past everybody else. So use yeah. what you have.
Use what you have.
To get where you're at. Because LeBron didn't have any parents that played in the NBA, but he had the size advantage. So
got it.
That's the thing. Yeah.
The other thing I think about too is that is that Alex Fetsky, my co-author of the book Uncommunist Manifesto, which again, check it out, uncommunist.com. He says that if we either have a fair rules and an unequal outcome, or we have unequal rules and an equal outcome. So if you want, if everyone that's pushing equality, in order to get equality, then we have to treat people differently.
Right. Because
if we treat everybody the same, then we get unequal.
Yep. Which is how it's supposed to be. I mean, everybody should have the equal opportunity, but there is no guarantee that you're going to succeed. There's no guarantee that what you do is going to make sense. And you're right. You have to treat people differently. And what that ends up doing is you have people like, for example, I've literally had white people tell me I'm oppressed. And I'm looking at them like, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
That's kind of why I had to get out of California. It's too many people that just feel sorry for you just because of my race. And that's the thing is like, now you have to treat people like, well, just because of this, this must be happening.
Right.
And that's where you start getting into, actually, that is more bigoted than the other way, where you treat everybody the same.
Yeah.
And whatever the outcome is it's up to the individual person. So,
yeah.
You know, people don't want to take responsibility for their actions. Accountability is a huge issue in today's age. That is how it works. And that's how it should as far as fair opportunity.
The other thing, though, too, is that if everybody wants equality, so they see Jeff Bezos or whatever, and he's super rich, and like, why does he have all that money? Like, he should give me some of that money. We should share equally. Well, Jeff Bezos, I'm guessing, I don't know, but I'm guessing he probably worked 80 hours a week for 20 years straight.
Right.
So does everybody, should everybody equally have to work 80 hour weeks for 20 years? Because I don't want to do that.
Exactly. Most people don't. They only
I don't want to do that. So exactly. Like people think, well, equally we should have the same money, but equally do you want to work as hard as he did?
Exactly. Yeah. No. And most people don't. And that's the bad part is people just see the end result. They don't see all the long nights, all the times may have almost went bankrupt or the idea was bad. They don't see all of that.
Yeah.
They see the end result and say, well, how can I get some of that? And the funny thing is people will complain about it and still have an Amazon account.
Yeah.
It's like, you're the one funding this. So, I just think if you really do have a problem with billionaires, stop using their products.
Yeah.
That's your protest, so to say.
Yeah. But you just equally, I don't want to work that hard. And even back to the basketball analogy, I mean, how much has LeBron, sweated and played his whole life?
Right.
I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. I have friends that have moved down to Central America, El Salvador, Nicaragua. Mm-hmm. They live on the beach in a hammock and they fish and they surf all day.
Right.
And they're perfectly happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
Why should they be forced to go work 80 hour weeks for 20 weeks?
They shouldn't.
They shouldn't.
Yeah. And if you don't want to, then don't expect the same outcome.
Yeah.
It's very simple.
It's simple. It's simple. And so I think that's bringing it back to Bitcoin. And so that's the advantage. So if we can be okay with sports guys being better, more skill, more fame, more money, because we view it as fair rules. If we can bring fairness back to the financial rules, maybe we can actually start to celebrate success again.
Exactly. Yes. And I think
you think Bitcoin's a way more fair system?
Absolutely. Protocol is built. Everybody can view it, as you say, permissionless, open source, and you get rewarded for your time. That's the biggest thing I like about Bitcoin is the time you put in for work, you're rewarded as the value of Bitcoin grows over time. And I think that...
What do you mean? Just like in its savings?
Yes, as a savings account. So you're rewarded for the work that you put in, whereas with inflation, you can work really hard for 30 years and your money's been constantly stolen from you over that time.
Right.
With Bitcoin, over the next 30 years, all of the work you put in to get Bitcoin will reward you for your time. And, you know, some people could have the savings of a 60-year-old at 20 years old right now just because they decided to accept Bitcoin instead. So it rewards you for your time, and it basically keeps in line with the ethos that people that work and put in the work should be rewarded as we all use the same system, which is reversed right now. You're actually punished for being a worker right now with inflation, high taxes, things like that.
Yeah, if you think about that, the division of labor allowed me to be really good at one thing and you'd be really good at another thing, and then we trade.
Right.
And if I could be really good at one thing, then I'm going to cure cancer, for example, right? And I should just be able to focus just on curing cancer. But because our money system is so inflationary, it's literally stealing the value from us. Mm-hmm. And so rather than me being the best brain surgeon or best, curing cancer, I have to be part-time that and part-time investor.
Right.
And if I do two things, I'm not really good at either one.
Exactly.
And so now half my time is spent trying to invest just so I don't lose my savings, that melting ice cube. And if you think about it like that, like think about all the brain power that's just been sucked out of the world. Like how much more advancement could we have gotten if people could just be a brain surgeon as opposed to being an investor?
Yeah.
And even to your point, I mean, people that are working, that you just made the point, like, you know, people work 20, 30 years and they save their money and at the end it's not worth anything.
Yeah. It's just, it's crazy. And now we're in the gig economy. Nobody does one thing anymore.
Almost. Right.
I mean, I don't think anybody under 25 has one single job that they do. They have side hustles or things that they do to make extra money. But you're right. When inflation comes, you got to get back on the hamster wheel and keep it going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you'll be able to just save your money, now you don't have to be this forced investor, which mm-hmm. is definitely going to change things as well.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Mark Moss Show. We're talking about Bitcoin. If you haven't caught on already, we're talking about the decentralized revolution that's changing the world as we speak. And we're coming to you from Miami for the Bitcoin 2022 conference. I am sitting down with Isaiah. You can find him on Twitter at BitcoinZay. He's the author of one of the best-selling books for Bitcoin and Black America. We're going to be right back with more, so don't go away. All right, welcome back. You are listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about Bitcoin and the decentralized revolution that is changing the world right now. I'm sitting in Miami for the Bitcoin Conference 2022, and it's big. It's a big deal. It's been amazing to see it rise. And a couple years ago, it was like a few thousand people. Last year, it was like 15,000 people. This year, it was like 40,000 people. It's amazing. It's a movement. It's growing, but it's still not too late. I'm sitting down with Isaiah. You can find him on Twitter, at BitcoinZay. He's the author of Bitcoin Black America, and he is trying to help bring more people into the space by helping people understand it's permissionless. It's an equal opportunity for everybody. Everybody has an opportunity. Now, we're talking about, before the break, we were kind of using this kind of basketball analogy with the rich and the poor and whatever. And we're talking about how if there was a fair set of rules, maybe people would like that system better, which of course they would. But a lot of people would still say that Bitcoin is unfair because you have the ability to buy a bunch of Bitcoin right now. And what about the poor people that won't know about Bitcoin for a year or two from now? What do you have to say about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, the fairness of Bitcoin doesn't come from how much you own. It comes from the node. The decentralization of Bitcoin is that nobody can change the rules. So if we all have the same set of rules, everybody starts at different places, and the accumulation of Bitcoin can be, you can be richer than somebody and only buy $100 worth, but you can also have less money and dollar cost average over time and far outdo how much Bitcoin someone has. So just because people start at a certain place doesn't mean that it's unfair that people are buying as much as possible, and the rules can't be changed because you have more Bitcoin. That's the system we're in now.
That's a big piece.
That's the huge piece. You have more money, you have more influence, you can get, you know, super PACs, you can get lobbyists to change the rules and get more money for yourself. Can't do that in Bitcoin.
Right.
No matter how much they own.
Yeah. That's a big piece. So unlike Bitcoin, the other 15,000 or whatever altcoins, cryptocurrencies that are out there, most of those, the big majority, run a different algorithm called proof of stake.
Yes.
And so whoever has the most tokens can stake them and they get the votes and they can do whatever they want with the network.
Oh, yes.
And the point that you're making is that with Bitcoin, you don't have that ability.
Right.
So just because you may own a bunch of Bitcoin doesn't mean you have any more influence or control over the network than anybody else.
Oh, yeah. Elon can't change the rules any more than I can.
Right.
He's the richest man. And, you know, so that's the good thing. And I still can't unsee POS always looks like piece of shit. But it also describes the system. All you're doing is a digital version of what we already have.
Right.
And you're putting lipstick on a pig by saying, yeah, proof of stake is great for the environment. It's faster. We can get more done. But what they don't tell you is, again, the control is given up as soon as you have a set of validators or a group of people that have more money.
Yeah. Yeah. And that goes back to the basketball analogy. And mm-hmm. so it's fair because the rules are fixed.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so in a POS system, they can change the rules if they have more votes. And so then we're back to a situation, like you said, just like what we have now with the Federal Reserve.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, if the monetary policy is constantly changing, you don't have a monetary policy.
Yeah.
Because at this point, the 18, whatever thousand cryptos, most are going towards proof of stake so they can keep control.
Yeah.
It's really hard for people to unlearn the idea that because I have more money, I should have more say.
Yeah.
That's not how it should be. It should be set of rules, fair for everybody, and then from there, do whatever work in that system.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Which is one of the reasons why the proof of work, which Bitcoin runs on a proof of work consensus, mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about, and that's one of the reasons why I believe that it's being attacked
mm-hmm.
right now. Like, they're trying to discredit any way they can mm-hmm. because they realize, well, shoot, we can't control that. We need to keep it in a system we can control.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we see that constantly. You know, with the Dogecoin hype and with some of the other coins hype, you would look at the wallets and then somebody would hold 50% of the tokens.
You're
like, well, I wonder what they're going to do. You know, so I think people who think proof of stake is better Do not be fooled by, you know, what's shiny. That it seems good. It seems like it's great right now, but it's sort of like the tortoise in the hare.
Yeah.
The hare runs fast, but it'll run out of energy way quicker. Tortoise is Bitcoin. Just keeps on going steady. Never going to stop. So, yeah, we'll end up winning the race. But, again, that's how it should be viewed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jumping back, I mean, your book obviously is helping, you know, bring what we call no-coiners, people who don't own any coins, trying to turn these no-coiners into, you know, buying it, believing it, and et cetera. I was talking with shout out to Luke. He helps me with some of my research on my videos. We were talking the other day, and he was talking about, what do you think is the best way to orange pill people, which we say orange pill, which means, you know, introduce them to Bitcoin or convince them to buy Bitcoin or whatever you want to call it. And Alex Fetsky, my co-author of that book, The Uncommunist Manifesto, which is on Kickstarter right now. Another shameless plug. Check it out at uncommunist.com. It's on Kickstarter right now. But he gave a talk at Unconfiscatable recently, and he said that we don't need mass adoption because the masses are always wrong.
Shout out to Alex. I love him.
And he said the masses will come eventually, but they'll come when they don't have to think about it just because everybody else is doing it. And so back to the question that Luke asked me is like, how do we orange pill people, and or how do we introduce them to Bitcoin? How do we convince them? Because most people don't understand what money is.
At all.
And if you don't know what money is and why it's broken, then it's very hard to understand why you might need an alternative. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, the majority of people, and it's some alarming number, I want to say it's like 40% of people don't have $400 for an emergency expense. And I said, those people, they probably don't need to worry about Bitcoin. They need to figure out how to get more than $400 in their bank account.
Exactly.
What's your opinion on that?
Oh, yeah. I've said that to people plenty of times. If you don't have the money to enter to the market, get a second job.
Yeah.
You know how to make more money or what to do with that money so that you can use it for Bitcoin. I mean, you can buy a dollar worth of Bitcoin, $5 worth, which is fine. But for most people who are in that situation, what I remind them is at a certain point, you won't have a choice. And I think that's what people don't understand is, like you said, mainstream always follows later, just like now. The internet used to be a choice. You could choose to use the internet and be fine without it.
Yeah.
People did it for years. But at this point, you can't live without it.
Yeah.
Imagine, I mean, people go to people's house, if you don't have Wi-Fi, they're like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
I think that's pretty much how it's going to be with Bitcoin and crypto.
Yeah.
Because some people will take that route. But
And that's eventually the masses will come.
Exactly. Yes. And they always come late.
Yeah, I was using this example, and this one, I have some maybe contrarian takes on income inequality, but I could say that income inequality is actually a good thing, and the reason why is, let's say in the 1980s, the rich people on Wall Street needed a cell phone, that there was no cell phone, and they probably spent $50,000 for this big old brick, but because they needed it, I didn't need it at the time, but they needed it and they had the money for it, they were able to buy that. And then they were able to invent that technology for them. And then eventually it got down to 20,000 and then to 10,000 and then to 1,000. And as more people got it, it got cheaper, cheaper, cheaper. And eventually now everybody has a phone.
Right.
And if it wasn't for them, the having more income than everybody else and more of a need for it, we never would have had, then the average people, then of course, America being a rich country got it. And then after America got it, then now everyone in Africa has it.
Yep.
And so you kind of need that income inequality gap. And that also kind of to your point, my first cell phone, I think, was like 1995 or 1996 or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And it didn't even have it didn't even have letters. It just had numbers on it. It had this big old whip antenna. And when I first got it, I was doing real estate investing in Southern California. And so I'd need a phone if I was out on the job site or whatever. But like, I never even carried it with me because I didn't know anyone else that had a phone. Who was I going to call?
Who you're calling? Yeah,
yeah, right?
Yeah.
And so like I didn't have to run around and tell everyone, you need a phone, you need a phone, adoption, get a phone. I didn't have to do that. Like eventually, just now you can't go without a phone.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that'll be the same. You can't live without a Bitcoin wallet at a certain point, or at least putting your savings in there, or at least interacting with the technology. It's going to be as a part of our lives as anything else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Real quickly, in a short spurt, like what's the best way to get involved then for the people that are kind of on the fence here?
I would say first thing is education. You have to, in my opinion, you got to put in at least 100 hours to be considered a noob because it's such a deep rabbit hole. It goes in history, politics, cryptography, math. I mean, it's so much that goes into it. You can't understand this industry unless you put the time in. So first thing is you have to put in the work. The second thing is meet, network, go to conferences with people who have the answers. Because I know some people that are, you know, right on the cusp. I've seen it a lot on my book tour. They had one question and I answered it on the book tour and they instantly bought Bitcoin after it. But they said nobody else could answer it before. So go to meetups. You'll always usually meet somebody that has the answers that you're looking for. So put in the work, go to meetups, meet people, and then lastly, get some skin in the game.
Skin in the game.
Nothing makes you study it more when your money's at stake. So
that's right.
That's what I've always encouraged people. Don't just study it without entering the market. No. Buy a little bit, see how it works, send and receive to different wallets. That's how you get involved.
Cool, man. Well, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about Bitcoin and the decentralized revolution. I'm sitting down with Isaiah. You can find him on Twitter at BitcoinZay. Check out his number one bestseller book, Bitcoin and Black America. And that's what I got for today. Thanks so much for listening.